Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and today's installment is a continuation of our look around the community at the effects being felt due to the COVID-19 outbreak. Today I'll be talking with SCSU sociology professor Tracy Orr, and the topic's going to be St. Cloud State University's Community Garden, which has been going on for 16 years now, as well as other topics surrounding food scarcity, which might become a very important topic as we continue to come to an understanding about what exactly is happening to society because of the pandemic. So, Tracy, welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, and how about we just start off, you introduce yourself, and what do you do with the university? And why don't you just tell us kind of what's going on with the community garden?
My name is Tracy Orr. I'm a professor of sociology at St. Cloud State, and I am the coordinator of the SCSU Community Garden, which is now in its 16th season.
Wow.
Started in 2005 to grow food and community, and yep, we're still on that patchway about 5th Avenue between 5th Street and 6th Street in St. Cloud.
Cool. And that's pretty much grown every single year, hasn't it? It's quite the success story.
It really has. I mean, we started out with just a 75 by 75 foot square of a garden. We didn't really know what we were doing. We had, you know, a dozen people maybe that summer, and now we're on the run corner as well. So we've got 4 housing lots total that we take up. It's all collectively planned and planted. We've got a pretty state-of-the-art irrigation system that's in there now. We built a gazebo last year. Got a lot of community volunteers, and yeah, it's really grown, right? It's well established, and it's taken off in lots of ways.
Yeah. And how have things changed because of, you know, COVID-19? What kind of differences are there now?
There's a lot of differences this year, and, you know, it's been challenging, but as soon as we became aware, I think, of the magnitude of COVID, I got started with trying to be proactive about making sure we still could have the garden, because the garden was grown, started to grow food and community, but the community was really important. It was going to be important for the people who've been involved and for the neighborhood and all of that for it to still continue. So I've done a lot of training and research to make sure that we are following safety protocols. So I participated in a webinar put on by Washington State Extension. I've been in touch with University of Minnesota Extension, right up at the Minnesota Department of Health, all of those different resources to make sure that we're following all the safety protocols. I established guidelines. I did a webinar training for all the gardeners in. I've set up a sign-up schedule so we can make sure we don't have too many people at the garden at the same time. I've cleaned the shed and sanitized every tool that's in there. Mm-hmm. We've got some signage coming this week, so that there will be permanent signage up in the garden that tells people, you know, what they should expect, you know, how they need to be in that space to make sure everybody is safe. I've worked with a couple of local folks to create some resources. I've got a great friend who built us a outside hand washing station to make sure that we keep our hands clean in the garden, all of that.
I know that does sound kind of sound a little strange, though. We're keeping clean in the garden. How?
Yeah, I know.
How often is gardening considered to be clean?
Even someone who brought me some hand soap said, well, don't you wear gloves? And isn't it just dirt in the garden anyway? And we're not worried about the dirt. We're not worried about all of that, but we are worried about the COVID bacteria virus being spread. And so even though we're not worried about the soil, that's good for us. We are worried about anybody, as we don't want anybody coming to the garden if they're sick. We don't want to, all of the different safety protocols people are doing when they're out with other people, physical distancing, washing your hands, not touching your face, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there does seem to be that shift in just how we do things these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these little, you know, I was thinking about that just the other day. Well, just think about it pretty much every day. You know, things are different now, and we move through our lives differently just because of this, you know, this thing, this disease that is essentially spreading through behavior. And it's kind of a strange thing, but yeah, it affects everything.
It certainly is. I mean, you know, and we're losing some things this year. We always had potlucks, for example. We're not going to do that this year, obviously. You know, we would sit around and talk a lot. And last Saturday was our first kind of group activity. And I think we had about 24 or so people throughout the day. And we still visited with each other, but it was across a distance. We still talked with each other, but we didn't sit down at the picnic table like we used to. So it is really strange, and I have to do a few reminders to people when they got too close to each other. But it's just we want to make sure that we can still have this space and that we're all healthy. So yeah, it is really weird, though, very, very weird. And as a sociologist and as a hopefully a community builder and a community organizer, this is definitely a both an educational time and a very strange time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't you, tell people a little bit about the concept of community gardening really quick? Because, we've talked about it before, but, for those who maybe aren't, that familiar with what a community garden is.
Yeah, I think that's part of the challenge we had with coming up with all of our guidelines for this year. So community gardens, they've been around for a very long time. And most people, if they're listening, are familiar with community gardens where you have an individual plot, you grow your food, you take it home. And that's not how we work at all. This is all a collectively planned and planted garden. It's about the total space is equivalent to about a third of an acre. And we started in the early spring planning on what we're going to grow. We work and cultivate it and grow it together. We share in the harvest. Our garden is open to anyone, and it still is. COVID hasn't changed that, so it's open to anyone. There are no fees. We have some more rules this year in terms of physical distancing and being safe in the garden, but otherwise our rules are, when you harvest something, you leave some for others. Do share the work, and anybody who does some work in the garden is entitled to their share of vegetables. So it's a pretty different concept in terms of this, in terms of community garden, but it's been successful for quite some time. We don't have any fences, and it's really a space that we want people, even in this environment, especially in this environment, to come and enjoy.
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing. I mean, how COVID touches all these different aspects of our world, even, something which is community-based, something which does bring us together, the garden. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, exactly.
Have you heard how this is changing other community gardens around the country? I mean, I know you talked about how, you were adopting some guidelines from, Washington State, but how have other gardens adapted?
Well, I think I've heard some have just decided to close and not operate this year. I know that the governor's emergency executive order and even nationally, all of the different guidelines I've heard that community gardens are still okay. Gardening is especially okay in community gardens. Still okay. I know that those individual plot gardens, what a lot of people are doing, they're rotating and kind of creating schedules so that you don't have somebody who has a plot operating next to somebody else who has a plot. They've also, the training I went through, the webinar from Washington State, they were saying, absolutely no visitors in the garden, just come, do your work, get your vegetables and go. And so that's really changed, I think, a lot of spaces. Jeff, that our garden doesn't have any fences. There's no gates. There's no way that you could keep out a visitor. And we actually don't want that. We just will. I'm actually going to be putting up some signs tomorrow that remind people of how to behave in that space, even visitors. But we want people to come in and enjoy the space, sit in the gazebo, wash your hands. There's hand washing stations in the garden that you can keep yourself clean and safe in that way. But we want people to use space as much as they have in the past.
Yeah, because this is a special space there. You know, people come and they do their thing, and you know they get to hang out. And I think that you know one of the things coming out of the COVID outbreak is people are a little bit more mindful of these activities that you know we used to enjoy as you know a group, you know, getting together, like you said, the potluck. But you know, we can't really have that anymore, but we can kind of have some of it. And, you know, I think that does something that is, you know, kind of changing our psyche a little bit.
Well, I mean, one, you can see that there's an increased interest in gardening because of this. Every seed source that I've ever used, and I don't go to Burpee.com or anything like that. I go to some pretty unique spaces as well as some common ones like Seed Savers and things like that. They all at one point were so overwhelmed with orders that they stopped orders. They shut down the website. People are wanting to grow things, and I think people are wanting to get connected. I think some people are just panicked that there won't be food left in the world. And in some ways, I think that's really that people are getting aware that there's an issue of food insecurity. But I think a lot of people just want to be outside and connect to the earth. And so we are, I think we've seen some people be interested in the garden this year that never were before. We've seen some people come back. It's a little bit sad that some of our gardeners, because they are in particularly vulnerable groups, they're still going to be involved, but they're just going to work on their own schedule. And so we won't see them as often. So that's unfortunate, but we're going to be using our Facebook page to communicate and to put up our work. And I've been talking with a few people, including my partner, about how this actually might be my fantasy garden season in terms of people can communicate more. So the folks who are going to be working on their own, posting things to the Facebook page and having sharing about what's going on, people having to sign up in advance means that people will show up, which is great. I had to clean the shed, and we have to keep the shed clean. And for once in 16 years, I might actually have a clean shed. So hopefully my fantasy garden, you know.
Oh, absolutely. So let's talk about, you know, food insecurity a little bit, because it is a big deal, you know, for people, especially when it's starting to dawn on them that this could happen. I think maybe it started literally with like the run on toilet paper. And, you know, people were freaking out about that. So they went and, you know, bought all this toilet paper. And then I noticed right away, I think this got kind of perpetuated by a rumor. There was a run on garlic here in St. Cloud. I don't know if you caught any of that, but I went to the grocery stores. I was like, wow, the garlic's all gone. And then I ended up going to the co-op out in St. Joe and found some out there. And, you know, now it's kind of back to normal, but that can happen pretty quickly. Something gets out there and then everybody goes and poof, there's a certain kind of food that's gone. And, you know, can you address that a little bit and, you know, kind of how that works?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't aware of the garlic one because we grow our own garlic and I bought all my garlic local from farmers, so I still have garlic from last year. So I missed that one, but I have noticed kind of runs on certain food, and you're hearing, this is where my optimist comes in. I heard on the news the other day that one in five children don't have enough to eat right now because of this COVID crisis. But that's more than in the past. We've had, you know, here in St. Cloud, we've got over 90% of the kids at Tilahi don't have, are on free and reduced lunch, don't have enough to eat. We've got pretty high rates of food insecurity here in St. Cloud before COVID. It's now higher, and I think because it's being talked about, I think we might actually have some efforts to address it. But just the lack of access to healthy, culturally appropriate food on a regular basis. That's what food insecurity is. And to have such high rates before COVID and now after COVID, I think in a country like ours is shameful, really. And it's a crisis that I've been you know, Jeff, that I've been kind of pounding on this for years, and finally people are understanding that this can happen to anyone.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today we're talking with SCSU sociology professor Tracy Orr about the community garden at St. Cloud State, as well as other topics related to food scarcity and food security, which is what we're talking about right now. Yeah, I think that is a deep understanding. So many people have lost income that, you know, it just kind of came out of nowhere. It's not anybody's fault. It just happened. Right. And now people are very aware. Or some people are very aware, I should say.
Yeah. But, you know, before COVID, 86% of children were food secure. So 14% were food insecure. Now we're hearing 20% are food insecure. Mm. And while 20% is horrible, we were horrible before at about 14%. And I hope that this is one of the lessons that we learn and that we hold on to after that we need to feed our children.
Yeah, and it is. It's one of those things you start looking into where does the food come from? And I think it is shocking many people, you know, like the recent, you know, with the meatpacking plants, you know, they've got their, uh-huh. you know, they have their issues with, you know, the COVID spreading through their employees. But then there's some other things like some dairies and things like this where it's becoming obvious that there's two different kinds of food chains. There's the one that goes to the industrial, the restaurants, and then there's the one that goes to the people. And I don't think people understood that before. And they don't understand why it can't change. Why can't it change? Or what would be something to do to change it?
Well, for us to, the word that we keep hearing a lot is pivot. For us to pivot mm-hmm. back to a local family farm system would be really difficult right now. Farmers were dumping milk, not just partly because restaurants weren't ordering anymore, but our dairy production system isn't, you know, Joe Farmer down the road growing it for his grocery store like it when I was a child, but it's growing for usually large companies. And when you have all of a sudden all this milk can't go anywhere, not only you know, does the farmer need to get rid of it, but the farmer needs to impact the price of it, because it's just like when oil suddenly was at negative pennies per gallon.
Yeah.
You know, so they're basically paying people to take it off their hands. Farmers can't afford to do that. We already have the number one cause of death to farmers in the United States is suicide.
Yeah.
And that says something about our farming system. And so they needed to impact the price of milk so that they wouldn't starve to death. Farmers need to eat too. And we don't understand that. People are shocked by what's happening at the plant in Cold Spring. And even my sister in New York was saying, well, aren't the workers in the plant social distancing? And if you've never been in a meatpacking plant, you don't understand that you can't socially distance. And why can't you socially distance? Well, I can't get chicken at whatever cheap price it is for chicken wings. I don't buy chicken wings, so I don't know. But really cheap price by having a nice, safe, healthy factory to produce it in. You have mass-produced chickens. You have mass-produced processing plants. And that means the workers themselves are shoulder-to-shoulder in a plant in uncomfortable conditions. They don't have the break space that they need. They don't have all of the systems that they need for them to stay healthy. The chicken is fine. The chicken that you'll buy at the grocery store, you're not going to get COVID from that, but our workers are going to die because of the conditions that they work in.
Yeah, and if you just think about it, shoulder to shoulder, if you're going to have a safe distance, that means you're eliminating like two people. Maybe four people, you know, because what's the shoulder length? So in order to have people 6 feet apart, that's two people on either side. So you've just, you know, cut the workforce down to 20% of what it was. So, you know, what does that then do to production?
Well, yeah, and then that means that if I want to buy cheap chicken at the grocery store later on, it's not going to be there for me. And I've, you know, our country's gotten so used to eating so much meat, and I'm not, you know, not on a PETA Save the Animals bandwagon at all, because there's a role for meat in our food system. But we're so used to eating inexpensive meat. It's become such a part of our diet that wasn't 50 years ago, that suddenly people are shocked that this isn't available, and now they're becoming aware of how it all happens, and maybe this might impact how we expect our food in the future.
Yeah.
But McDonald's is saying that they have to limit the amount of beef they're sending out to their restaurants. There's something going on.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask you, too. What other, you know, how have you noticed the changes in this? What other changes have you seen just with the way that, you know, folks are doing things? Not just big restaurants, but maybe small ones. sorry. You know, just what other kind of shifts in how we do things have you noticed so far?
Well, I think it's made a lot of people slow down. I mean, there's two, if not more, you know, kind of groups of people. There's a lot of people who are suffering in all of this, so I don't want to ignore that. There are a lot of people who are out of work, who have no money, who are, you know, their lives are really incredibly difficult because they can't pay rent, they can't pay their bills, they don't have any jobs. And then there are those people who have privilege who are now baking bread and reconnecting to the land, and that's all fantastic. But I think it's shown people to kind of move your footprint more locally, whether that's your footprint of what you're buying or what you're eating or who you're connecting to. So we're talking about staying away from people, but it's also brought people together. I think it's made people recognize the importance of their local economies and their local communities. So supporting local restaurants, I think, would be a really important thing right now. I heard, you know, some restaurants are going to be doing more curbside service and online ordering and delivery in the next week or so as some measures might get kind of more relaxed. Hopefully this will help people stay aware of supporting their local economies, their local small businesses, their local farmers. Farmers markets are the safest place to go shopping right now. I had people ask me if a farmers market on campus was going to be open this fall, and they were wondering if it was safe. And it's like, people are willing to go to Coburn's or Cash Box or Byerly's. You should be willing to go to a farmers market. You're thinking, think about if I went and bought produce from Thorson, some of the growers down at the St. Cloud Farmers Market, I can tell you that I can name the people who have touched my food there.
Yeah.
And I know the process that they use. You don't know where your tomato from Mexico or wherever it came from and how many hands have touched it. So support local farmers markets, support local restaurants, support local businesses. I think that's the change I'm hearing, and I'm hoping that we can take that.
Yeah, it is kind of like an airlock system. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, what are you bringing in, and who has interacted with that object? We don't think about that much. Just any object. I'm just looking at a pin on my desk right now. Who touched that pin before I got a hold of it? So
right, exactly. Yeah. Well, if I sell jam at the St. Cloud Farmers Market, that's how we raise money for the garden, and I can tell you that when I sell jam this fall, I can name Ken Remler, grows all my raspberries, and so he's the only one who's touched the raspberries. I'm the only one who's going to touch them. So there's two people who've touched that jar of jam before you buy it, and we both will use safe food handling practices, but you're much safer buying that jar of jam from us than from wherever you buy it from.
Yeah, do you think that that's maybe going to be like kind of a new marketing thing? Is that, you know, the tracking the chain from, you know, the you know, the plant, the animal, you know, how many stops along the way before it's right there in front of you? Do you think that may be a thing for the future here?
I think it will be. I mean, it has been in the past, like, you know, back when it was called Golden Plump, used to be able to scan the barcode and you would know where that chicken was raised. And it was a little bit frightening to realize how many stops along the way it had. I think now people are aware of that food chain. It's something I used to try to get across to my students a long time ago. And now I think people are more aware of that. And I think, again, people are going to be trying to limit the number of stops along the way their food or their thing that they're purchasing, the gifts, the tools that they use, et cetera. Just trying to, this might have a positive impact on our economy in some way.
Yeah, got to keep optimistic. And yeah, it's you know, people are going to make it through and people are changing, you know, every little aspect of our life. Yeah, it's become more meaningful. So if people wanted more information on the community garden, how would they go about finding you?
They can just Google St. Cloud State Community Garden. You'll find me and you'll find lots of things about the garden. But you can go to stcloudstate.edu/community garden. You can go to our Facebook page. Go to St. Cloud State Community Garden on our Facebook page. If you go to SESU Community Garden, you get Southern Connecticut University Garden, which is no longer operating. You don't want to do that. So Facebook, our website, you can email me at the university. You can always look me up. My last name is O-R-E, for Tracy Orr at St. Cloud State. You can, again, as I said, Google, or you can always give me a call at 320-492-6724. I'll tell you all about the community garden.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, anything else you want to chat about or bring up?
We're going to be, if anybody's listening this week, we're going to be out at the garden this Saturday from 9:30 till 4 o'clock. And if you go to our website, there's details about how to sign up for a slot. Our rain date is Sunday because it's supposed to rain on Saturday. So this weekend we'll be in the garden at some point. And get in contact if you'd like to sign up for a time slot.
All right on. Well, thanks for chatting today, Tracy.
Sure, Jeff. I enjoy it very much.
And we've been talking with Tracy Orr, St. Cloud State University sociology professor, and the one in charge of the community garden on campus. There'll be activity in the garden this coming Saturday, unless it's raining, and then Sunday. And if it's raining then, you might have to check for more details. And you can do that by visiting our website at kvsc.org and looking under the Area Events tab, or by finding them on Facebook by searching for St. Cloud State Community Garden. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, reminding you that you are what you eat, so grow it well. The untold stories of Central Minnesota are made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC. A proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.